Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host, and we've got a great Monday show for you. A great Monday show. Second hour, we'll do Ask a Priest, which is always a fun show to do. Father Matthew's going to be here with us, and we're going to, he's just a wonderful priest and able to answer your theological questions, your pastoral questions. You've got a prayer question, family question. He's just a great one, and we love it when he's here. So Ask a Priest, second hour. First hour, Trent Horn is our guest, and as you might imagine, Trent Horn's been up to all kinds of broadcasting lately because he's been one of the leading voices, pro-life voices in the United States in the recent years. And so people wanted to hear what he had to say about that Dobbs decision. And we're going to do persuasive pro-life this hour. If you have questions about how to be persuasively pro-life, you're welcome to call and ask Trent whatever you like. 888-318-7884. 888-318-7884. Trent, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Cy, for having me.
You did a really fine podcast. Like the day that that Dobbs decision got leaked out, I thought very impassioned and well-reasoned, and you just seemed on fire.
I was. Well, I mean, this is really the in 50 years, and of course, I've only been at it for about 20 years in the pro-life movement, but in 50 years, this is the closest the pro-life movement has come to its goal of overturning Roe versus Wade and giving states the power to protect unborn children like they had prior to Roe versus Wade. So, I mean, it hit me like everybody else. I was sitting at home and checking my phone and saw the news, and just like my heart stopped for a minute, and then I click on it and read through. I stayed up late reading the opinion, the leaked opinion, and we still don't know if this is the final opinion, if minor changes will happen or if major changes will happen. Something to commit to prayer. But then the next day, yeah, I just had a lot of thoughts to share. I think it's important now. Everybody's talking about abortion. And so we need to be ready. People need to be equipped to have these conversations. That's why I definitely recommend people. One easy way to do that, honestly, is to go to schoolofapologetics.com. Schoolofapologetics.com. I have a whole course there on pro-life apologetics, on arguing about abortion. So go to School of Apologetics and check that out. And you'll learn just how to talk about this like I do, because there's going to be a lot more conversations on this issue. But yeah, I was passionate about it for a lot of different reasons. So I decided to cut loose a bit, and you know, we'll see what happens.
The number 888-318-7884, persuasive pro-life this hour with Trent Horn. You're very welcome here. And certainly anyone's welcome to call, whether you're Catholic or not Catholic, if you'd like to talk about pro-life arguments, which we're going to have to continue to make. And in many ways, I'm sure there will be lots of opportunities because of this Roe versus Wade decision, however it all comes out, to make those arguments. 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. I have to say, Trent, watching the media, I think the media has been very, very fair in its reporting to the pro-choice side. it's just like ridiculous cheerleading. It doesn't even seem like news the way they report it.
Well, news has stopped being news for many years now. That when you see people talking about this, like most journalists in mainstream media support legal abortion. They don't even try to hide it. And so they see themselves as not just people who are trying to cover the news to share information with people, that they have a role. That's been the problem with journalism really in the past 20 years, that journalists see their role not as reporting what is happening, but to cause what is happening, that they believe that the way they tell stories in media affects their outcome. And so they have to craft it in that way. We see this both with traditional media and also with social media. When social media, for example, censors or hides stories that turned out to be truthful because they were worried about the political fallout from sharing those truthful stories. Yeah. And so it's the same as with Roe versus Wade, that there is a particular narrative. They'll try to meet the bare minimum journalistic integrity. Some pro-lifers say this, but here is our way better and more emotional soundbite from a pro-choice person, and we'll give them way more time and coverage to speak. So yeah, the arguments, I mean, I wasn't prepared for what all the arguments would be. I thought there'd be the classic ones. What about women who will die from back alley abortions, things like that. Another one that has been pushed is the idea that if Roe versus Wade is overturned, then the court is going to overturn all these other cases.
Oh, I know.
There won't be right, though they're going to ban contraception, the right to so-called same-sex marriage will be overturned. Now, frankly, I don't agree with those cases either. But if I looked at things from a purely pragmatic perspective, based on how the justices have voted in cases, I would say there are not enough votes on the Supreme Court to overturn Obergefell versus Hodge, the so-called same-sex marriage case, because Neil Gorsuch, for example, he voted in favor of recognizing LGBT stance as belonging, you know, being subject to it's a covered under discrimination law.
Right. Yeah. I was surprised that Gorsuch and Roberts did that. But I would think if you're going to make that argument that this Roe decision means all this other stuff is going to happen, you'd have to at least acknowledge that there's some evidence to the contrary. Also, I do think, Trent, when I see people go immediately to, well, now that this has happened, this will happen, is they're not comfortable talking merely about abortion. They're not comfortable talking about the fact that in the Constitution. They want to talk about other things. They want to make it about other
things. Because most Americans, the problem is most people who are rabidly pro-abortion online, they live in an echo chamber. They live in their social media echo chamber and in their particular socialite bubbles in New York or Los Angeles or other places. And they don't connect with regular people. And most regular people are ambivalent when it comes to abortion.
Right.
They're not really in favor of making it illegal, but they also really don't like abortion and they would prefer to talk about something else.
Yeah. Right.
And so you're not going to get them jazzed up to want to defend abortion itself. Though I mean, abortion spoken about more, usually they try to say reproductive rights or something like that. But that's why it's important for us to say, okay, let's talk about this. Should abortion be legal? What is abortion? What are we talking about here? Is this what you're talking about? And describe it. And I love using descriptions of abortion from previous Supreme Court cases to say, look, here's how the court has defined abortion before. And so that's why we still have to hold the line. We'll be doing that for a while, even if the case comes out in Dobbs next month, still favorable to pro-life advocates.
I'm hoping it comes out before next month. I mean, there's no evidence.
I don't want to wait that long either.
But I wish they would just get it out. I mean, it's just going to cause... rip the Band-Aid off. I mean, especially if there's no change in the voting, just rip the Band-Aid off. Let's go. No point in waiting. Let's start with Joe in St. Joseph, Missouri, listening on EWTN. Glad to have you, Joe. Go ahead with your question for Trent.
Hey, what's up, guys? How's it going?
Really well, Joe. Thank you.
Good. So for a number of years, I was under the persuasion that when abortion was legal, the numbers tend to trend down, and when abortion is illegal, the numbers tend to trend upwards. Someone told me that, I'm sure, via the internet or something, and I believed that for a number of years and even, you know, told other people that. I'm starting to realize that that's likely not true and that the organizations that put out a lot of that data are actually very, very pro-choice organizations. Do you... have any insight on that?
Yeah, well, I would say we should just approach it from a logical perspective and then a factual perspective. First, this claim doesn't make sense on the face of it, that if you make something illegal, it will happen more. I would ask someone to give me an example where everybody agrees if you make X illegal, it will happen more. There are cases where if you make something illegal, you see negligible diminishing returns for it. You see it's decreased. The only case where I can think of where making something illegal, it happens more, might be if you ban an obscure book, right? If you ban an obscure book that nobody ever heard of, suddenly everyone's like, well, I want to read that book. And, oh, well, I'm willing to illegally download it. What's going on here? That you create controversy where none was. But people know what abortion is. It's not like some kind of obscure thing that the law shines a spotlight on. So I would say it just doesn't make sense that most people obey the law. Even if they disagree with it, most people obey the law. Like when the law said you had to wear face masks in outdoors, or when I lived in California, it was illegal to go to the beach. It is so idiotic. It was illegal to go to the beach because that's more dangerous than going to people's houses when there's a plague. And you know what? Most people didn't go. I went because it was a dumb law and I didn't see the need to follow it. I'm still feisty from my talk on Roe, so now I'm going to say
things.
Well,
you are feisty. Yeah.
Come get me, Gavin. Come get me. I'm out of your jurisdiction. I'm in Texas now. So my point is, though, it just doesn't make sense. Most people obey the law. So when something's illegal, it does decrease the rates of it that are that are involved. On the face of it, it just doesn't make sense. Maybe there's a few isolated cases where, as I mentioned previously, but abortion wouldn't fall under that. And factually, that's just not the case. That when you look at abortion rates from 1973 to 1980, abortions in the United States increased by 80%. So if it's true that making things legal decreases them, well, what happened with Roe versus Wade? Abortion suddenly is legal in all these states across the country. Did the rate go down? No. You can look at the CDC, Planned Parenthood will show you the graph from 1973 to the mid-80s. Abortion continues to go up, and then it starts going down. But it doesn't go down because now it's legal. There's a wide variety of reasons. One reason is that abortion facilities were getting shut down. And so there were a lack of facilities providing this. And so when there's a lack of supply, people just choose to not seek it out. So I would say in general that this claim, logically and factually, it just doesn't really make sense. So I hope that's a helpful reply.
Excellent. Great information. Thank you.
Thanks, Joe.
No problem.
We got to take our first break. Trent Horn is our guest. We're talking about persuasive pro-life. If you'd like some help being persuasive in your pro-life arguments, give Trent a call. 888-318-7884.
Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting support provided by Homeschool Connections. Homeschool Connections hosts the Catholic Homeschool Conference. The 2022 Catholic Homeschool Conference is June 10th through 11th, and the website is CatholicHomeschoolConference.com. That's CatholicHomeschoolConference.com.
The most original and exclusive Catholic content is on EWTN Radio.
If one person's faith has been nourished by this program, it's worth it. And knowing that people of all different walks of life are listening, but also getting something out of it, that's the excitement I find in it.
EWTN Open Line Monday with Father John Trigilio. Tonight, 10 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kelly, your host. Trent Horn is our guest. You should check out Trent's podcast, Council of Trent, at TrentHornPodcast.com, TrentHornPodcast.com. You can become a member. There's all kinds of different levels, but also just enjoy what you see there. You also can follow Trent on YouTube if you'd like to do that. Also, check out our podcast, Catholic Answers Focus. We also did an episode last week on the what appears to be the coming end of the Roe versus Wade regime and a new world opening up. But we did one for Cinco de Mayo as well on the Cristeros and just on the general history of Catholicism in Mexico in the 20th century. So you can always check out Catholic Answers Focus just by going to CatholicAnswersFocus.com, CatholicAnswersFocus.com. You can find us on YouTube. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. Trent, let's see who we got next. We are going, a little confused. I confused myself for a moment here. Excuse me, Trent. Let's go to Nate right down near where you are in Dallas, Texas. Watch it on YouTube. Good to talk with you again, Nate. Go ahead with your question for Trent.
Thank you. Good morning. Good afternoon. Sorry. Howdy, neighbor. I had a question about something that is maybe a little bit touchy. So if parents wanted to change the station or turn it down, wanted to give them a minute to do that. But it's about war crimes and physical assaults during wartime. Okay. So wartime sexual violence can be used for many things like intimidation, psychological tactics, and genocide, even if you're trying to replace a population.
Right.
And my question is, if somebody were to engage in that and then stay with somebody, you know, stay quartered with somebody, because it would be, you know, made clear that the woman might try to seek to end it if she was not monitored.
You mean a pregnancy?
So if yes, a pregnancy. So okay. If someone was staying with that woman for the entire term, would they be just continuing the original crime, or would they just be being a good Catholic, making sure that she doesn't abort it?
Okay, so this is an interesting case. First, I would say it is never justified to directly kill an innocent human being. The case where you've described is an interesting one because it seems to describe someone doing the right thing for a morally hideous reason. But that wouldn't, so that person could be morally wrong even though they're still doing the right thing. Let me explain. So you're talking about, suppose someone in a war-torn area, they commit an act of rape to, you know, obviously to harm someone. And then in order to continue that person's psychological trauma, that let's say that person wants to choose to have an abortion, that person wants, the rapist is preventing the abortion, not out of concern for the life of the unborn child, but simply to continue to apply psychological anguish to the rape victim. So if that is the case that's involved, I would say that the person is not continuing the crime of rape because rape involves non-consensual intercourse. What they are doing is they are trying to apply psychological anguish to a person. So in that sense, they are morally culpable. They are a bad person for trying to cause psychological anguish, even though they are actually doing a good thing. They're trying to prevent someone from killing another innocent human being. But the problem here is, so they are a bad person because they have a bad intention. So the moral act has three elements to it: the object, the intent, and the circumstance. All three of those are necessary for an act to be good: what we're choosing, why we're choosing it, and the circumstances. So if any of those three are immoral, the act itself becomes wrong. So you could have a good act that becomes wrong through a bad intention. So let's say, for example, that you want to marry somebody, but the only reason you want to marry that person is to drive some other person absolutely insanely jealous, and you relish in causing them mental anguish by choosing to marry this other person. Now, in choosing to marry that person, the act of marriage itself is not wrong, but your reasons for why you are doing this, you are doing something bad if your direct intent is to just cause anguish to somebody else. But it would not follow, therefore, that marriage is wrong, or even choosing it, or even if you chose it, knew that it was an unintended effect. You can't control other people's feelings. So going back to the issue of this person who has raped someone and wants them to remain pregnant, they are a bad person, but that would not make abortion in this case moral, because nothing justifies killing an innocent child. I guess I could try to change your example. So that's one off the top of my head. Another counterexample might be, suppose someone has kidnapped born children as a part of war and is making other people care for those born children, even though it causes them anguish and things like that. That wouldn't make it right to kill these born children in a circumstance like that. So that's my first thought off the top of my head of the example that you gave. Is that helpful?
Yes, but when you touched on something at the beginning, I want to double back to that and ask, is there a good way for this person, this invader, to make the same outcome? Like, are they ever justified? Could they just say, you know, it's not about me prolonging your anguish. It's about my Catholic beliefs, and you're Catholic, and I'm Catholic, so I'm not going to let you.
Oh, my goodness. First, this person should obviously, the situation you've described is a difficult and odd one. This person should repent of the evil that they've done and submit themselves to justice for the crime that they have committed. So part of that would involve other authorities coming to hold this person accountable for the rape they've committed, and then seeking care for the woman who's involved. Now, if you're in some kind of war-torn area, you know, I don't know if you can necessarily do that. But the bare minimum standard of morality would be for this person to repent from what he's done, to say that, you know, he's done wrongdoing, and to encourage the person. It's similar to take the example to something that is less emotionally charged. Imagine a man and a woman engage in fornication. And so the man fornicates with this woman and she becomes pregnant. that he should repent of what he has done and putting her in this situation. And if she's considering abortion, to say it was wrong for me to fornicate with you, but we should not kill this child, should not suffer because of a decision that I've made. And you could apply that in some way to the issue of rape, even though, of course, it's not a one-to-one correspondence because rape is non-consensual. So that might be where I would put it there. But if someone is in a situation, just because someone wants to cause someone pain by making them just because you want to cause someone pain by prohibiting them from doing evil, it does not follow that the evil act becomes good or that you can do it. It just, all it shows is you're a bad person, and that's it. So thanks for the interesting thought experiment, and I hope that reply is helpful.
Thanks, Nate. Thanks very much. Up next is Caselyn in Pennsylvania, watching on Catholic.com. Caselyn, you there with us?
Yes, I am. Hi.
Am I pronouncing your name wrong?
It's Caselyn. It's all together. It's Caitlin.
I gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. So my question is for Trent. I got your book that was sent to me a few months ago, which has helped a lot. But my one question I have is, I got someone to change their mind about being pro-choice about 2 weeks ago, and the next day they started telling me, well, it's not a human. So I'm like, so I want to know, how do I prevent them from going back to the pro-choice side, if that makes sense?
Well, all you can do is be a good listener and offer them the truth in dialogue in a service of love to them. And know that you and I don't have the power to cause someone to change their mind on an issue, nor do we have the power to make someone remain committed to something if they do believe it. That's not really up to us. All we can do is put a pebble in their shoe, give them something to think about, and offer our best case. If we do help someone to change their mind, periodically checking in with them to make sure they're doing okay can be a great thing to do. But we shouldn't feel too guilty or burdened that, oh, I got to make sure they don't change back, this or that. That's not within our ability. And usually when people change their minds on very important issues, it's not like a light switch where they just say, oh, I'm pro-choice, now I'm pro-life, or I'm an atheist, and now I'm Christian. Usually there's a lot of back and forth between someone as they change their mind on an issue. So it should be expected a person will, objections will surface, and it'll be kind of rough going at first. And we just have to make ourselves available to that person to help continue the dialogue and let them know that we're a safe place, that we offer a good resource for empathetic listening for them and what they're going through. So I hope that is helpful for you. And thank you very much for calling in.
Thank you, Caselyn, very, very much. I do hope that that was helpful to you. It's Persuasive Pro-Life. Trent Horn is our guest, and lots of folks on the line, so I'm going to keep moving. If you'd like to call, the line just opened up, 888-318-7884. Melba in Miami, listening on the EWTN app. You're next. Melba, go ahead with your question for Trent.
Hi, Trent. Thank you for taking my call. So my question is the following. I am pro-life. I have run into several young ladies at work in their 20s, early 30s, who are pro-choice. And their defense and their way of thinking is, what do we do with the women who are not able to afford their babies once they're born? What do we do with those women that are in situations where husbands are abusive and they're pregnant? When I bring up the topic of adoption, then they bring up other similar stories having to do more with financial reasons and perhaps the woman not wanting to give her baby up for adoption. So I'm kind of confused as to how to answer once the babies are born, how, as a community, how do we go about caring for mom and baby and helping promote the pro-life choice?
And what's important here is we need to tell people we may not be always sure what the right answer is to a tough situation, but we can always be sure what the wrong answer is. And the wrong answer is directly killing an innocent human being. So when people bring up these examples, what we want to do is compare it to a born child and say, well, imagine that a mom has a 2-year-old and she loses her job or her boyfriend has suddenly become abusive and she's dependent on him for income and it's just a really tough situation. Should she be able to kill the two-year-old? Like, really focus, like, take the exact same situation and put it, should you kill a two-year-old because they're in poverty or they're in an abusive situation? Most people say, well, no, you shouldn't kill the two-year-old. There's adoption. There's other resources. And we can say, look, you're willing to find nonviolent solutions to a problem involving a two-year-old child. You're willing to say, hey, at least we shouldn't kill the two-year-old. If the unborn are equally human, we should not do that to them as well. Melba, be sure to stay on the line. I'd love to send you a copy of Persuasive Pro-Life. It goes into this in much more detail.
Hang on, Melba. Thanks for that great question. We got to take a very quick break. We'll be right back with more Persuasive Pro-Life with Trent Horn right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Have you enrolled in the Catholic Answers School of Apologetics? Let me ask you a more important question. Do you believe as a Catholic that you have an obligation to share the Catholic faith? In fact, the Church has answered this question, and the answer is that all confirmed Catholics are obliged to share the faith. It's actually in canon law. Catholic Answers is here to help you fulfill that obligation. Our School of Apologetics courses will equip you to help all the people you come in contact with understand what the Church teaches and why. A great place to start is with all the Catholics in your life. Learn the art of apologetics from the best of the best and start sharing the gospel today. Visit schoolofapologetics.com. That's schoolofapologetics.com. Here's a question. Is it really possible to be friends with someone who died 2,000 years ago? Maybe the problem is that we've grown way too comfortable with the story of Jesus. Nice man, right? Taught us to love one another, said not to judge people. We celebrate his birthday every year. It's time to put away this small, safe version of Jesus, says Cy Kellett. Nobody that bland could have transformed the world. In A Teacher of Strange Things, Cy presents Jesus Christ undiluted by sentiment, with all his radical words and deeds uncensored. Do you know someone, your son or daughter perhaps, or maybe your mom or dad, who needs the friendship of Jesus Christ? Do you? Order your copy of A Teacher of Strange Things by visiting shop.catholic.com today or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Our guest this hour is Trent Horn. Next hour, Father Matthew will be here, and we are going to do Ask a Priest. You can ask Father whatever you'd like. Maybe there's a sacramental question you've got, a pastoral question, marriage question, family question. Maybe you got a theological question or a moral question. It's all welcome during Ask a Priest. Any question that would be appropriate for a Catholic priest, you are welcome to ask it. 888-318-7884. This hour, Trent Horn here with us, Persuasive Pro-Life. We go now to Anonymous in Florida, listening to EWTN on Channel 130, Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Anonymous, thanks for waiting. Go ahead with your question for Trent.
Thank you for taking my call. My question is, how do you speak to someone whose defense for abortion is that the children who would have been born in all these years would have caused, would have become criminals and caused us more grief with their criminal behavior and activity?
Sure. So, Anonymous, there is a moral issue and a factual issue, the moral issue being the more important one. So the factual issue, this argument comes from a book called Freakonomics, and it claimed that crime rates were declining in the early 1990s because the children who would have become adults in the 1990s were aborted in the 1970s after Roe versus Wade. And so that is the factual claim, though the factual claim itself has been disputed. Others have said there were other reasons for the decline in crime rates. in the early 90s, that it's not necessarily due to abortion. One argument is that the introduction of unleaded gasoline and other things of removing lead paint actually prevented more children from growing up to be criminals and things like that. So that's a factual issue. But even granting that it were correct, you could even say, look, even if this hypothesis is correct, that children in unintended pregnancies are more likely to become, grow up to be criminals, it would not follow that abortion is moral. First, you can say, look, would you agree that not every child in an unintended pregnancy becomes a criminal? Like, not everyone, but you could make the statistical argument, well, they're more likely to from an unintended pregnancy. But that, of course, that wouldn't make it right to kill them if they're human beings. Because you could take this same argument and say that statistically speaking, boys that are placed in foster care as young children, like, you know, 5 or 6 years old, they are more likely to grow up to be criminals than children in a regular statistical group, in the average child, because they've suffered from a lack of appropriate development during the earliest years of their lives. So you could say, look, there's good factual evidence that kids placed in foster care, boys at age 5 or 6, you know, that they're more likely to grow up to be criminals. Should we kill boys that are in foster care so they don't grow up to be criminals? Well, no, of course not, because they're human beings. And the same is true of the unborn if they're equally human with a born child. And they are, they're just less developed. But your right to life is not dependent on how developed you are. So that might be how I would approach that situation. Is that helpful?
Very helpful. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Sure. Anonymously appreciate it. The number is 888-318-7884. Trent Horn here, Persuasive Pro-Life. You want to be more persuasive in your pro-life arguments? Call with your question. Casey in Oregon, watching on YouTube. Go ahead, Casey, with your question for Trent.
Hello, Trent Horn. I just wanted to say, first of all, that I love your stuff. I buy a lot of it, and I'm broke because of all the stuff I buy. Anyway, my question is...
thank you.
Is abortion ever medically necessary? And if that's the case, where did the aborted babies go?
Okay, so the question is abortion ever medically necessary? And what is the post-mortem fate of children who are aborted? Are your questions?
Precisely.
Okay. What I would say is that it is never moral for us to directly kill an innocent human being, no matter the consequences. In theory, there could be a case where a person will die unless an abortion is performed. Now, I'm not going to rule out and say that there is no such case. Most abortion laws, in fact, all abortion laws prior to Roe, allowed for abortion if a woman's life were in danger. So if Roe were overturned and the state laws were repassed, they would follow that same pattern as they were before Roe versus Wade. They would be legal, but the question of whether it's moral or not would depend on different individual sets of morality. But just because something might be medically necessary doesn't mean that it's moral. So even if it's legal and it's medically necessary, Catholics wouldn't participate in that, even if others could. So to give you an example, suppose we have two people, Fred and Bob, and Fred needs a new heart, and Bob has the right heart to match, but Fred is going to die in 3 days, and Bob is terminally ill. He probably won't die for another 3 months. If we do nothing, both Fred and Bob will die. But if we kill Bob and take his heart and give it to Fred, at least Fred will live. Here in this case, the moral decision would be to do nothing, because the only alternative is to directly kill an innocent person. It's not enough to say, well, we should do the option where only one person dies, because you cannot do something that's intrinsically evil so that good may come from it. And so there could be a case, medically speaking, where both mother and child will die. If you directly kill the child, the mother may live. If you're directly intending his or her death, but that wouldn't be justified. But that would be very, very rare. In the vast majority of cases, either it's late enough in pregnancy where you can deliver the child prematurely and give them a chance to live, like via a cesarean section. Or it's very early in pregnancy, like an ectopic pregnancy, where the object of the act is not to kill the child, it's to remove a damaged part of the woman's body, like part of her fallopian tube that has become damaged, where you're not, the object is not killing the child, it's helping to cure the mother's body. A similar case would be if a pregnant mother had uterine cancer. You could treat the cancer with chemotherapy, even though the child may die, but the child's death is a foreseen consequence, not an intended one. So I would say here that abortion is never moral. There could be some strange medical case where killing the child may save the mother's life, or it could be medicinal where killing the mother saves the child. And I'm saying we shouldn't do either of those. We should not directly kill an innocent person in order to save another innocent person. So I hope that's helpful on the first question. On the second question, I would say the church has not given a definitive answer on what happens to those who die without baptism, specifically children, either fetuses or infants who die without being baptized. However, there was a document from the International Theological Commission in the early 2000s that said we can have a hopeful confidence, but not a complete assurance that the God who said, let the little children come to me, that Jesus who said, let the little children come to me, will welcome those children into heaven. I think there's a very strong case to be made that children who die prior to birth, that children whose parents are Catholic and were planning to baptize them, would receive a kind of baptism by desire. I think there's a strong case for that, at least for the children of Catholic parents. But more on that, you can read on our website at Catholic.com. So I throw a lot out there, you, Casey. I hope that was helpful for you.
Casey, I'm going to leave it there, too, because the lines are still full, and we've got just a little bit of time left with Trent. So I'm going to go to Daisy in Kansas, listening on the Sword Radio. Daisy, you there with us?
I am.
All right, go ahead with your question for Trent.
So earlier in the show, by the way, thanks for taking my call. But earlier in the show, Trent had mentioned that in the years between like 1973, I believe, when Roe v. Wade became whatever it is, an amendment or whatever it is, that the number of abortions actually increased, you know, until the mid-80s. Mm-hmm. And I just wondered if then in the years after, you know, mid-80s on, when the number of abortions decreased, did the number of adoptions increase?
Yeah, I do not know the statistics off the top of my head about the change in adoptions over time in the United States. I strongly suspect that adoption rates have increased even marginally. Some of that may be due to issues related to abortion, but honestly, I think increases in adoption rates were more likely due to reform of adoption laws, laws that worked out previous inconsistencies or legal loopholes or problematic parts of the law that might have made it very difficult for people to adopt children, increasing the availability of things like closed adoptions or open adoptions, just by allowing it to be facilitated more so it's just more streamlined. I think that probably marginally increased adoption rates. But most research we see that when women find themselves faced with unintended pregnancies, the vast majority of them, more than 90%, probably more than 95 or 98%, frankly, choose to raise the child. Adoption is really it is by far the least popular option for an unintended pregnancy. The most popular options are raising the child oneself or with a partner or family member or choosing abortion. And that's why I think it's important for pro-life advocates to understand this, that saying, what do we do now that abortion is illegal? If we just say, oh, adoption, and just never say anything else, that's not really the answer for most people. Most people just don't end up choosing it. And there's different pastoral ways we'll have to reach people and other ways we're going to have to talk about this issue. But I hope that's helpful to your answer, Daisy. Sorry I couldn't be more specific on the rates themselves.
Okay, Daisy.
What you said was very helpful. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Daisy. Boy, the lines are very, very full. We'll take our quick break and we'll be right back with more Trent Horn, Persuasive Pro-Life, right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Let us help you with your question today on Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Underwriting by Great Catholic Music.
Great Catholic Music, your one-of-a-kind streaming platform for traditional Catholic hymns and contemporary favorites 24 hours a day. Music that soothes the soul, that's safe for the whole family to listen to. What a relief. Great Catholic Music. Download the free mobile app or listen on any Alexa-enabled device or write from your PC or tablet at greatcatholicmusic.com. Great Catholic Music, melodies for the soul.
Hi, I'm Joan Ebestinski, station manager at Holy Family Radio in Central Pennsylvania. When I found out about Catholic Radio, I knew that God wanted me to be a part of it, and I'm glad I am. Catholic Radio makes a difference in people's lives. It has the power to lead others to the truth of Christ and His Church. With Catholic Radio, we can nourish our Catholic family and share our faith with others.
The world needs EWTN Catholic Radio, now more than ever.
We have a big problem. Our culture is dying, and souls are in danger of being lost. The answer is conversion to Jesus Christ in His Church. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a Catholic organization, and we have hundreds of teams spreading the good news throughout the country. But we need your help. The harvest is great, but the laborers are few. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Welcome back, Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Our guest is Trent Horn. You can find him at TrentHornPodcast.com if you want to get his podcast, Council of Trent. Trent, I got a request that I think would make a good episode on Council of Trent.
All righty.
What about doing an episode? Because I feel like there's certain ways we could react if Roe versus Wade is overturned that would be very unhelpful. And like maybe do one on mistakes for the pro-life movement to avoid in the coming years.
Ah, that's an interesting one.
Yeah.
That is interesting. I might have to bring in some of the big guns to do like a collaborative chat about that, like Stephanie Gray Connors and others. That might be really fun.
I'm available.
And Cy, we'd be happy to take your questions too.
Steve in Fargo, North Dakota, listening on Real Presence Radio. You are up next, Steve. Go ahead with your question for Trent.
Oh, Trent, thank you for taking my call. So when I was younger, I was with a woman who had an abortion, and I wanted to have the child, but I was never given that opportunity. In the future, as technology is getting more and more progressed, and that ability will eventually be there to allow that baby to grow outside of a woman's body, beyond just the test tube baby, but to bring it all the way to full life. What would the Catholic Church's position be on that? So then the father could then be able to have sole custody of that child, or be able to have that child, if that makes sense.
Right. So the question is, the case you're proposing is, suppose a woman becomes pregnant and she doesn't want to be pregnant anymore. And so she could transfer the child to an artificial womb instead. What would the church's position be on that? What I would say here is that the introduction of the artificial womb technology doesn't change the moral aspect too much. It changes it a little bit in some respects, because what you're talking about is essentially surrogacy with a machine. Because right now we can develop embryos in an environment that is not their mother's womb. Specifically, they're implanted into somebody else's womb. So let's say, for example, what would the church's position be if there was a medical procedure where a woman is pregnant, and then she just doesn't want to be pregnant anymore, So she transplants the child to another person's womb, and then they give birth to that child. I would say that the church is teaching its condemnation of surrogacy would apply in that case, especially the case is just, I just don't want to be pregnant. Well, a child has the right to reside within his mother's body. And so a mother does not have the right to evict their child from the comfort and protection of the womb just because they no longer want the child's presence there, even if they could do so in a safe way. Now, the question of whether it should be legal or illegal, that's a little bit of a different question. I think everybody can agree it should be illegal to fatally evict your unborn child. People might disagree, though, about whether it should be legal or illegal just to transfer the child somewhere else. So this might not be a question of law like it is with abortion. Some may say it should be illegal. Other Catholics and Christians may say it's not something the law should necessarily interfere with. But I would say the church would say from a moral perspective that would be immoral, whether you're transferring the child to another woman's womb or to an artificial womb, merely because you do not want to be pregnant is not sufficient to engage in surrogacy. However, there is a difference that arises, though, when it comes to the question of for the child's well-being. If you were to move the child for the child's well-being, like let's say the uterus had become inhospitable to life, would it be appropriate to move that child somewhere else? This gets us to a question, actually, that Catholic ethicists are wrestling over dealing with human embryo adoption or snowflake babies. There are abandoned children in IVF labs around the world, in embryos in cryopreservation tanks. And some people have said, well, what if, let's say, a married couple adopted those embryos for the embryo's sake so that they could be born and not die in a cryo tank. What is the church's position on that? In Dignitatis Personae, a document released by the CDF, I know the acronym's changed, I'm still going to call it the CDF, a while back, the document seemed very pessimistic towards embryo adoption. It didn't full stop say that the church taught that it was immoral, but it's pessimistic towards it. But Catholic theologians they disagree about whether it's moral or immoral. You have people like Father Tad who say embryo adoption is wrong. It causes a woman to become pregnant through a lab technician rather than through the marital act. So it's wrong. You got other Catholic solid theologians like William May who say, well, no, it's not wrong if it's done solely for the child's benefit. So then that would bring us into the artificial womb question. Let's say you have, before I go down that road more, the case that you're giving of someone, who's the option is, I'm thinking of getting an abortion or putting the child in an artificial womb. The church would say, abortion is the worst thing you could do. The artificial womb is less wrong, but the moral act would be to continue the pregnancy. That would be the answer to that specific case you brought up. But suppose that you had a woman who's, has uterine cancer or has some kind of health condition, and they're trying to move the child to a safe place for the child's benefit. Now, moving the child to another womb gets tricky. It runs afoul of the arguments people like Father Tad make, which say that you are initiating pregnancy in someone, and that should only be done through the marital act. But suppose we had the artificial womb, though, and you moved the child from a compromised uterus to an artificial womb. Would that be wrong? And my intuition on the matter is that it would not be wrong, that it would be just essentially a more advanced stage of what we do now, where there was a time where if you had a problem in pregnancy, you had to wait until, 32 weeks to deliver a child or they're going to die. Now we can deliver babies. Some have been delivered as young as 20 weeks old. But in order for them to stay alive, they have to be placed in a neonatal care unit, a NICU, also known as an incubator. Now that, it's not an artificial womb, but it's kind of close. I know there are researchers who have worked on creating fluids that are oxygenated. They've shown they put little rats in what looks like water, but they can breathe in it. It's oxygenated. So in theory, we can make a neonatal care unit what if you could put a 15-week-old child in it and it has oxygenated fluid so they can breathe? Because the problem is before 20 weeks, their lungs aren't developed enough. That's the big block we would be hitting now for early deliveries. So there, I would say in that case, if it's done for the child's benefit and it's done to an artificial womb, the church does not have a teaching on it, and I my opinion would be that that case would not be immoral. But it does cover a lot of ground, Steve. I appreciate the thoughtful question. Actually, at the National Catholic Bioethics Center, I'm working with a few editors. We are releasing the second edition of an anthology on human embryo adoption that will include essays on artificial wombs. So that was a lot of philosophizing and moralizing there. Steve, was that helpful at least to start?
It was very helpful. I appreciate that so much.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks very much. And I'm going to keep moving because we're getting up close to it and we still got folks on the line. So let's go to Wichita, Kansas. Greg in Wichita, listening on 1360 AM. Glad to have you, Greg. Go ahead with your question for Trent.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Trent. Question was recently brought up about when does ensoulment occur? And has the church ever stated that? It kind of got me thinking of that when you were talking about the two-year-old analogy versus the preborn, and don't we treat things differently now? You know, an abortion clinic that was killing two-year-olds, we would certainly be more zealous towards stopping that than the newborn. So, and you can weigh in on that.
Right. And so what I would say here is that the church has not given a definitive answer to when the soul enters the body. In 1974, the CDF released a declaration on procured abortion, and it said, "This declaration expressly leaves aside the question of the moment when the spiritual soul is infused." I would say many theologians would argue that it's at conception because the soul is the principle of the body. It's what makes your body alive rather than dead. So if biological life of an organism, of a human organism, starts at conception, the soul would also be infused at that time. But the church has not made a definitive teaching on it. But it simply has said, we know scientifically that the unborn are human beings from conception onward, and so they ought to be protected under the law. So I would say that's how I would probably respond to that question.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Trent, I think we got, if someone will go quick.
We can get one more.
And let's go to, what do you think, Luke in Minnesota? Let's go to Luke in Minnesota,
sure.
Listening on Catholic.com. Hang on, Luke. Are you there, Luke, with us?
Yep.
All right, Luke, go ahead. You got to be real quick with your question, though.
All right, yeah, so I was just wondering, you gave the heart attack or the heart analogy earlier where if someone's dying, I was just wondering if it would be moral for someone to willingly donate their heart to someone else knowing they will die.
It would not be moral to do that. The compendium of the Catechism of the Catholic Church in section 476, which is citing section 2296 in the Catechism, summarizes it this way. The transplant of organs is morally acceptable with the consent of the donor and without excessive risks to him or her. So the idea is there can't be excessive risks that are involved because you still have to do justice to your own body. We don't have the right to kill ourselves, even to save other people. So you can do something heroic without the intention to end your own life, like jumping on a grenade to save your buddies, because you might live. You never know. Maybe it's your day to be Captain America and it was a dud. But you can't directly kill yourself, even with the goal to save other people. So you can donate organs, but you can't donate organs if there is an excessive risk to your own bodily integrity, if you are alive. And so donating your heart, that's one of several organs where if you were to donate that organ, it would result in your death. And death certainly constitutes an excessive risk. So no, the church would not support organ donations that result in the direct killing of innocent people, even if the people volunteer to do that. So,
Luke, we've got to leave it there because we are right up against it now. Thanks very much for the call, Luke. Trent, thanks for starting the week off for us.
Of course. Thank you for having me, Cy. It's great to talk about this timely topic.
And can people still hear your wildly enthusiastic episode that you did on Roe versus Wade if they go to TrentHornPodcast.com?
Yeah. So go check out Council of Trent on iTunes, Google Play, and YouTube. And it's one of my more recent episodes, Breaking News, Supreme Court signals the end of Roe v. Wade. You can check that out with other episodes.
Thanks for breaking that story for us, Trent. Hey, coming up, Father Matthew Spencer is going to be here. We love Father Matthew, and you will too. And if you have a question that's appropriate for a Catholic priest, a pastoral question, a theological question, maybe a sacramental question, 888-318-7884. Right back after this.